This is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America.
Hello and welcome. Welcome to VOA Africa. Thank you for joining us. I'm Yehiyes Wuhib in Washington. Here's what's coming up on Africa News Tonight.
What is new on this election about these results is that UNITA won in Luanda. Luanda is the biggest electoral circle.
That's VOA's Mayra Fernandez reporting on preliminary election results from Angola's capital, Luanda. Details coming up also. An Ethiopian government airstrike hit the capital of the volatile Tigray region, Mekele, today, reportedly killing several people. These stories and more ahead on Africa News Tonight. We start with our top story. With more than 90% of the votes in Wednesday's election in Angola counted, the ruling People's Movement for the Liberation of Angola, or MPLA, looks set to extend its almost 50-year hold on power. It appears to have held off a challenge from its former civil war enemy, the National Union for the Total Independence of Angola, UNITA. Mayra Fernandez from VOA's Portuguese to Africa service is closely monitoring the preliminary results. She talked to me from Angola's capital, Luanda.
Hello. We are now on the second day after the election. By this time, the National Electoral Commission has 97.03% of the votes counted. They are giving MPLA the lead, 51.07%, and UNITA, 44.05%. With these numbers, we are talking about 124 elected for parliament and for MPLA, and for UNITA, 90. What is new on this election about these results is that UNITA won in Luanda. Luanda is the biggest electoral circle. It's the province that has more eligible people to vote. And this is where UNITA won. UNITA also took Cabinda and the province of Zaire. So it's historical on that sense. But these numbers are still preliminary numbers. We are hoping to have a final count, having all the 100% votes counted and the results probably by tonight. But that doesn't mean exactly that it's the final results, because after this, it goes to court, constitutional court, and the party can still contest the results. Another party that is a coalition called Casa CE, their numbers were so bad, they didn't get to elect one single parliamentarian, and they are promising to contest these results also. So as you can see, we might have another week of uncertainty, but it's very unlikely that the winner will be a different one.
Mayra, are you saying there is a possibility of UNITA trying to contest the results?
There might. Because now when we look at the numbers, and UNITA yesterday shared numbers that still give MPLA the win, but the difference is the number of parliamentarians that they can actually bring.
It looks like a very closely fought election. What is the reaction from civil society camps as well as the populace?
Civil society members have been sharing a very kind of disappointment towards these results. Especially people in the capital, because they were the ones actually very engaged on this process, asking for change, and they really wanted a different outcome. The population yesterday, we saw some people in the outskirts of Luanda marching, saying that MPLA didn't win. And for tomorrow, there's actually a demonstration scheduled at 10 a.m. local time. Members of civil society activists are calling for a demonstration to contest these results that the National Electoral Commission has been releasing.
And lastly, Myra, like you said, the loss of UNITA has disappointed a lot of people, especially in Luanda. But the MPLA vote is down from the 61% it gained in the previous election in 2017, while UNITA's share is sharply up from the 27% it polled last time.
So looking at the numbers in a very pragmatic, practical way, yes, for the past five electoral process, that's exactly what has been happening. If you look at the numbers, it's 10, 10, 10, 10, which also creates some sort of skepticism among civil society members, because they are actually highlighting that. From the point of view of the party, if we only look at the numbers, of course, the gap is smaller between UNITA and MPLA. I think that's a very valid point. But we wonder now, we media, the political analysts, what is it that UNITA is going to do next to shorten even more the gap?
That's Mayra Fernandez from VOA's Portuguese to Africa service. She spoke to me from Angola's capital, Luanda. What Kenyans are going through as the Supreme Court considers challenges to the August 9th election is not indicative of any type of dysfunction in the country's electoral process. John Makumbaku is the Distinguished Professor of Economics and an attorney at Weber State University here in the United States. He says no matter how the Supreme Court rules on the challenges, opposition candidate Raila Odinga will be remembered as significantly contributing to the improvement of the country's democratic institution.
What Kenya is going through at the moment is very important for a young country to go through, because the country is still trying to develop a multi-party system in which citizens can use the electoral process to pick candidates to serve in government. You remember that Kenya returned to multi-party competition only in the early 1990s. So it hasn't been a very long time for Kenya. So if you imagine that a country like the U.S. is having problems with its own elections, even though it's been dealing with elections for much longer than Kenya, we can understand and appreciate the difficulties that Kenya is going through. So as an observer of the situation in Kenya, I wouldn't necessarily consider the problems they're having now with respect to the August 9th elections as something that is indicative of a failure or indicative of a dysfunction in the electoral system in the country.
You've written extensively on Kenya's constitution and its independent judiciary. Actually, in 2010, it worked, but is this judiciary still independent in 2022?
So you ask me whether or not the Supreme Court or the judiciary in Kenya would maintain the independence that it has done before. Mr. Odinga, when he appealed, when he petitioned the court to intervene in the August 9th election, one of the things he mentioned was that he, just like he did in 2013, is that he has confidence in the independence of the judiciary. And I think that the judiciary, during the last couple of years, has shown a significant level of independence in 2017 and recently when it intervened in the BBI process. I still believe that the Kenyan Supreme Court has retained that independence. I believe that it will be independent enough to be able to make the decision that will allow Kenyans to move away from this election with confidence and move forward with their development.
What is Odinga's complaint in the first place, specifically?
Well, Odinga's issues have to do with the last process of the vote. Odinga's problem has to do with that final result. And so he believes that the process of bringing together those results that were being transmitted electronically from the various voting stations around the country into the central location that was manned by the Independent Electoral and Boundaries Commission, and he believes that that final stage was not conducted properly. And he wants the Supreme Court to come in and make a decision on that. But what we have to understand here is that the frustrations that Mr. Odinga has, we have to give credit to the fact that Mr. Odinga has been a very long-term advocate of democracy in Kenya, going back to the early years of the struggle for democracy in the country. And his petitions to the Supreme Court have actually significantly improved the Kenyan electoral system. And this is true for the fact that after the 2017 election, his petition actually is the reason why the electoral system functioned so well in 2022. And I think that whether he loses at the Supreme Court this time around, he will be remembered as one whose activities actually contributed significantly, not just to the improvement of the electoral system in Kenya, but also to the improvement of the country's democratic institutions. And we must remember that he was one of the architects or one of the politicians who lobbied significantly for the development of what came to be the 2010 Constitution, which actually introduced an independent Supreme Court and provided Kenyans with direct access to the Supreme Court when they lose an election.
Distinguished professor of economics and attorney at Weber State University, John Makum Mbaku, he was talking to me from the U.S. state of Utah. An Ethiopian government airstrike hit the capital of the volatile Tigray region Friday, reportedly killing several people. The airstrike follows the collapse of a humanitarian ceasefire in northern Ethiopia that had halted fighting for 5 months. Henry Wilkins reports from Gambella, Ethiopia.
The French news agency AFP reported Friday the Ethiopian Air Force bombed targets in the Tigrayan capital of Mekele. A doctor at a Mekele hospital later told Reuters news agency the airstrike hit a children's playground, killing at least 4 people, including 2 children. The Ethiopian federal government issued a statement online advising all citizens in Tigray to keep away from potential military targets. Some on Twitter pointed out that most communications have been severed in Tigray for months due to a government shutdown of the internet, and that people inside Tigray would have no way of seeing the statement. In a text message to VOA, government spokesperson Salamawit Kassa said the Ethiopia Air Force is targeting only military sites. He accused the TPLF of dumping fake body bags in civilian areas in order to claim that the Air Force attacked civilians. An information war between the federal government and the TPLF has been ongoing since their conflict began almost 2 years ago. Airstrikes are another escalation in the recent return to fighting in northern Ethiopia. On Wednesday, ground fighting in the Amhara region effectively ended a 5-month ceasefire, which had raised hopes of peace talks. The international community has expressed grave concern over the renewed hostilities. Humanitarian organisations say even before fighting intensified, large parts of Tigray were likely in a state of famine. Henry Wilkins for VOA News, Ethiopia.
Somali authorities say a record drought has created near-famine conditions in the country's southwest state. New arrivals at relief camps say they are eating animal skins to survive. Mohamed Daisen reports from Baidoa, Somalia.
Baidoa is the administrative capital of Somalia's southwest state, one of the worst drought-affected areas in the country. People who have lost their livelihoods due to drought arrive at relief camps every day in search of humanitarian assistance. Sumudle, a new camp on the outskirts of Baidoa, hosts hundreds of new arrivals, mostly from the marginalized Ele community. Some of the Ele walk over 150 kilometers to Sumudle after losing their livestock and harvest because of 3 consecutive seasons of no rain. Isho Matker Madi is a young and pregnant mother of 4. While building a small makeshift house, she tells VOA she took a difficult journey to arrive at the camp from Hawal Barbar in Bay region. Madi says she and her children walked for 2 days and 2 nights to arrive at camp. She says people help the exhausted family with a ride in an out rickshaw. She says she migrated after losing 20 goats and 20 camels because of drought, forcing her to beg to feed her children. Habiba Ibrahim Haider is the administrator of the camp. She says the camp houses more than 300 new arrivals who have nothing to eat, and some have started to eat animal skins because they have not received humanitarian aid so far. 2.5 kilometers away, there is another relief camp. Masiko, an American humanitarian group, is providing the people there with water and cash to live in the camp, but it is not enough. Mukhtar Haji Abukar is 73 years old. He arrived 3 days ago from the countryside of Bokol region. Sitting on an animal skin, he tells VOA he lost everything because of the drought. Abukar says he had 60 cattle before the drought, and now the only thing remaining is this one skin. He says he and his family haven't cooked anything today or last night. He says it took him 4 days and 4 nights to get here from Bokol. Abukar said this drought is the worst he has seen in his entire life. In a trip for journalists arranged by Masiko, CEO Jada Dion McKenna said the situation in Somalia is dire and beyond comprehension.
I met two women who had lost babies along the way and had to bury them on the roads as part of their journey. We at Mercy Corps are providing cash to vulnerable families to buy food and other essentials, and also providing water and hygiene kits to prevent disease spread.
Somalia is witnessing one of the worst droughts in recent history. More than 1 million people have already been displaced by the drought, according to the United Nations. The UN said more than 7.7 million Somalis, nearly half of the country's population, need humanitarian assistance because of the drought. UNICEF earlier told VOA that drought-related malnourishment has already killed 500 children in Somalia. Mohamed Daisane, VOA News, Baidoa, Somalia.
Botswana has suspended all beef exports, including to the lucrative European Union market, following a suspected outbreak of foot and mouth disease this week. The Southern African country is one of the world's top beef exporters. From Habrone, Botswana, reporter Mokandisi Dube has the details.
Botswana's acting director of veterinary services, Kifense Mutsegwa, says all exports were halted as of Wednesday, August 24th, pending investigations. The suspected outbreak of foot and mouth disease was reported in an area near the Zimbabwe border.
We are testing suspicions of foot and mouth in the northeast district, a village called Utali. I have to emphasize, still a suspicion. So that means the strong suspicion, we suspended movement. This is to control the standard way of controlling foot and mouth. Basically, we will know, we'll confirm when we get laboratory results. We'll be in a position to say yes, indeed, it's confirmed.
Neighboring South Africa suspended exports last week to curb the spread of the highly contagious disease, which affects cloven-hoofed animals. Botswana veterinarian Mbachi Mwazituma says if the outbreak is confirmed, steps to blunt the spread have to be taken.
The short term would normally involve either stamping out, which basically will involve slaughter of all infected and in contact animal. That is a traditional way. But it is slowly falling out of favor because countries like England, even Botswana, used to use that strategy. But it comes at a great cost because it means people have to be compensated, etc. And there's also the environmental issues of animals that have been slaughtered. How do you dispose of them safely?
Mazinduma says there is an alternative strategy to halt the spread.
The second containment measure after that is once you've decided and known where the animals and which animals are infected, is to do what you call ring vaccinations to create a buffer. basically, in other words, around those the infected area, those animals that are within that area or that is adjacent area, they are vaccinated. And immediately at the same time, these things can also happen in tandem, surveillance is also done. If it is animals that have been previously vaccinated, the new technologies now are able to differentiate disease if it is present in an animal that has been vaccinated or disease in an animal that has been infected.
Botswana earlier introduced a shoot to kill stray cattle crossing from neighboring Zimbabwe in a bid to contain the spread of the foot and mouth disease. For VOA, this is Mkondisi Dube in Gaborone, Botswana.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
Nearly 20 million people living in the Horn of Africa are facing a crisis of food insecurity. The region has suffered four consecutive droughts and is looking at a fifth come October. The Horn region has two rainy seasons per year, said USAID Administrator Samantha Power, who recently visited some of the most seriously affected regions in Somalia and Kenya. This is the first time in history, she stressed at a recent talk here in Washington, that the Horn of Africa has suffered four consecutive failed rainy seasons.
Today, pasture lands are turning to dust, and in near biblical scenes, weakened farm animals are dying of disease. To date, at least 7 million livestock have already died in Ethiopia, Kenya, and Somalia. There just isn't enough water to quench their thirst or enough grass to feed them.
Through the United States Agency for International Development, or USAID, the government of the United States is providing critical humanitarian assistance totaling $1.2 billion to the three most severely affected countries in the region, Ethiopia, Kenya, and Somalia. Early humanitarian investments are critical to saving lives. In Ethiopia this year alone, the United States is providing $668 million in support of more than 8.1 million people whose survival is threatened by the historic drought. In Kenya, the drought has pushed more than 4 million people to the edge of starvation, with communities in the arid and semi-arid land countries having been hit the hardest. By the end of May, some 70% of crops were reported lost, along with at least 2.4 million head of livestock. USAID is providing to the people of Kenya nearly $255 million in emergency food and other critical humanitarian and development assistance. And in Somalia, 7.1 million people are affected by this crisis. More than 3 million agricultural animals have died, and 1.4 million children are facing acute malnutrition through the end of the year. USAID is providing $476 million in critical humanitarian and development aid to the people of Somalia, bringing the U.S. total assistance for this year to more than $707 million. This humanitarian aid illustrates the United States' continuing commitment to the welfare of the people of Ethiopia, Kenya, and Somalia. We urge other partner governments, said Administrator Power, to join us in significantly increasing their own commitments to prevent widespread famine and millions of deaths.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
And that wraps up this edition of African News Tonight. I'm Yehiyas Muhib in Washington. For all the latest developments on the continent 24/7, visit our website at voaafrica.com. On behalf of our producer, Mokbili Abaro, and our engineer, John Walker, thanks for choosing The Voice of America.
Maxwell, host of Music Time in Africa. Join me every Saturday and Sunday for an hour of awesome African music. Wake up, dance this music. Like to stay on top of new music trends, breakout artists, new releases? Maybe you just love the classic styles and artists of the past. or simply the sound and feel of a good beat. Whatever your pleasure, you can get it every week right here on Music Time in Africa. So join me on your local FM station.